The Precinct Omega Weekly Podcast is supported by Horizon Wars Zero Dark, sci-fi skirmish war games in a fallen earth. Visit Wargame Vault at wargamevault.com and search for Zero Dark.
Welcome to the Precinct Omega Weekly Miniatures News Podcast. I'm doing something different this week. I'm trying to record video of the podcast as I go, and I'm doing this live. Normally, this is just an audio podcast, and if you are listening to the audio podcast, you are missing nothing except my face. But I'm just trying to expand my YouTube video channel offering, and so I'm going to start trying to record the video and see how it goes. So I'm going to cut from here and go forward. If this all works, you guys on YouTube will see this video. If not, you won't. It is Friday the 28th of May 2021. My name is Roby Jenkins. I do not have Bernard with me this week. But this is a very exciting day for me because today is the release day for Horizon Wars Infinite Dark. If you want to see Horizon Wars Infinite Dark and have a pick through it, I'll be doing a separate video. I'll be live streaming this afternoon. I will be recording that and putting that up on YouTube. So check another video and you can have a look at the Infinite Dark rulebook. But this week, I am going back to my design series. So a couple of weeks ago, we looked at close quarter battle. And a couple of weeks before that, we looked at range combat. So this week, I've come to the subject of armor. And we're going to look at how it's treated in various different games. Where I think game designers often go wrong. We're going to talk about some technical aspects of how armor is addressed in modern, historical, and speculative combat, and talk in general terms about how designers can think more accurately about armor in a way that should make games both more elegant and more immersive. So, I've got notes down here, so if I'm looking away from the camera, that's what's going on. Let's start with what armor is and what armor isn't. Without going for a classic Webster's Dictionary definition, we are talking about the fact that armor isn't a way of protecting the thing in which it is encased from harm. If you think about this, if you wanted to wrap up and ship a beautifully painted, fragile painted miniature for tabletop war games, if you wanted to ship that around the world, you would not wrap it in armor. You would wrap it in bubble wrap. You might stuck it up in packing peanuts. You might use cotton wool. And in fact, that's the idiom that we use in English. You know, we talk about wrapping things up in cotton wool. You don't want to wrap your children up in cotton wool. Oh, you can't wrap them up in cotton wool. That kind of thing. We put soft things around things we want to protect, not hard things. So, what is armor? Armor is not there to protect the thing inside it from harm. Armor is there to mitigate the harm that the thing inside has suffered. In other words, armor is there when you are sending something somewhere where it is going to get hurt. It's inevitable that it is going to get hurt. The armor is there to reduce the impact of that hurt. And that, I think, is the first big important point about armor that most games and designs do seem to miss. So, armor assumes harm, and it will mitigate it, not eliminate it. Now, unpacking that in more detail, let's have a look through some points that I'm going to try and cover off. So, first of all, the classic function of armor in a tabletop miniatures war game is the armor save. And obviously, Games Workshop features this substantially in their games, and a lot of other games have kind of either drawn on that or drawn on similar concepts to introduce this idea of the armor save. Now, the armor save has a couple of things going for it. First, it introduces the idea of armor as a concept. The second thing is that in a player versus player context, it keeps the passive player engaged in the process. So I attack, you defend. I attack with my shooting or my choppy blade or whatever we're up to, you defend with your armor save. So in games that are on a strict I go, you go structure, where one player may have some time to themselves, it ensures that the other player remains engaged with the process. And that's good. That's a good thing. But that is also a very gamey feature of a game. So now there's nothing wrong with gamey features of games. They're games. We should have things that make them fun and keep the players engaged. Absolutely. But we should always be cautious of features of a game that are there because it is a game, but which actually detract from the experience of combat that it is taking place. And I would argue that the armor save is a classic example where how it is usually applied detracts from the combat at hand. Now, just to unpick Games Workshop's own mechanics a little bit here, because they are the elephant in the room, so inevitably we have to deal with them. Games Workshop has reduced the experience of shooting to three core rules: a roll to hit, a roll to wound, and then a roll to save. And the hitting and wounding is done by the attacker, and the saving is done by the defender. Any failure in that process is as good as no attempt whatsoever. So if I roll to shoot and I miss, I might as well have not rolled the dice. If I roll to shoot and I hit, and then I roll to wound and I don't, I might as well have not rolled the dice. If I roll to shoot and I hit, and I roll to wound and I succeed, and then my opponent rolls their armor save and they succeed, I may as well have not rolled the dice. Do you see what I mean? There is multiple points of failure along the way. And yes, that the statistically the odds of failure overall at each step reduce, all the same, it's a very ungranular approach. It's either a wound has happened or it has not. But the fact is, the way armor works is that if you've been hit and you've been hit in a location critical enough that it's going to cause you a debilitating wound, but your armor has saved you from that wound, you don't simply proceed as if nothing has happened. You can't ignore an impact that would have killed you if your armor didn't save you. And that's true of an individual, as it is of a squad, as it is of a tank, as it is of a mech, as it is of an aircraft. All of these things are affected. And that is something that a lot of game systems gloss over. Now, we're going to talk about abstraction and how different levels of abstraction demand different levels of granularity in these rules. But when we're talking about games at a platoon plus level or below, then that level of abstraction deserves to be in there if you're going to get a combat experience that doesn't need to be purely simulationist, but it needs to capture the essence of what it is to be in combat. Okay. There is an alternative to that, to the process that Games Workshop does, which I would call stacking success. So if you aim to shoot something and you miss, you missed it, you've not got there. But if you aim to hit them and you hit them, but then you don't wound them, that is a degree of success that should be acknowledged. If you hit them and you wound them, but their armor saves it, that is a greater degree of success. And then if you hit them and you wound them and their armor doesn't save them, that is the greatest degree of success. Now, personally, I would like to see fewer dice rolls involved at all, but, you know, three's modest and it has become something of a kind of industry trope. So we'll work with that. But the more rolls there are, the greater opportunities for a degree of success there really ought to be if you're going to capture something of that essence of what armor is actually doing rather than just being another obstacle to success. Oh, yeah, I've got a note down here talking about the one roll solution. Now, this is something that's become quite popular recently, and a lot of games will talk about how they do this and how it works and how it doesn't. And the one roll solution is basically you roll one dice and that resolves the question entirely. I wish to shoot at a target. I roll one dice. I now know not only have I hit the target or have I wounded the target or has the target saved it, I know exactly off one dice roll. I know it all. Okay, that target has either been wounded or it is not. Full stop, one dice. And that does have an appealing simplicity. But as I mentioned before, it does disengage the target from the process. And I think it really does help to have the target involved. And also that there is a risk with a one-roll solution that you do exactly the same as Games Workshop's three-roll solution. Because you've either got success or you've got failure. There are no degrees of success involved in a one-roll solution. Well, there could be. There could be. So that's sort of where I would leave you on that particular topic. Okay, the next thing I wanted to talk about was one of those sort of granularity issues. Armor here isn't armor here. For those who are not watching the video, I'm gesturing at two different parts of my body. So armor worn by most modern soldiers is focused upon two key areas, which is the head and the heart. Those are the instant kill zones, or at least the head and the upper center of mass. Increasingly, we are seeing modern soldiers wearing more sophisticated and larger sets of armor, and those are beginning to cover things like the carotid artery, the brachial artery on the arms, the femoral artery on the legs, and they're seeking to protect those as secondary vital zones that they want to get up against. But fundamentally, you've got different armor in different places at different levels. Now, the idea of an armor save is an attempt to try and sort of capture that idea that, let's say you've got just for the sake of argument, you're rolling a d6 and you've got a 5 plus armor save. So if you roll a 5 or a 6, your armor has saved you from death. And this is to some extent an attempt to capture that application of either you've got armor or you haven't. Because if you roll a 5 or a 6, the shot has hit an armored location and you are saved. If it's a 1 to 4, it has hit an unarmored location and you are not saved. But although that could be argued as an abstraction from the classic 5 plus armor save, I'm not sure it works that well in that respect, in capturing the idea that some parts are armored and some parts are not. It's a distinction that I think is lost on most players when you boil it down to something that simple. Now, obviously, it's very difficult, unless you're playing a role-play game where you can really get down into the nitty-gritty of what part of the body a shot has hit, be it the head or the chest or the arms or the legs or the groin or whatever. It becomes hard to get that into a typical tabletop war game. And we need to acknowledge that, but at the same time, it is worth bearing in mind that there are degrees of armor. And it's not just about where the armor is located, but the fact that different armor is designed for different purposes. So some armor is designed to protect against direct ballistic impact. Some armor is designed to protect against explosive compression. And one armor that's great against one of those things is not going to be great against the other. But again, in a tabletop war game, we tend to just boil it all down and say it's all the same. Now that's an area where I would say that actually there is room to allow for some granularity, even at a platoon plus level game, to talk about the types of armor that are unit might be equipped with. I mean, we talk about types of weapon. People, I mean, my Horizon Wars games tend not to really focus on types of weapon. Again, I like the abstract nature of you're either hit or you're not. But, you know, in sci-fi games, we've got laser weapons and we've got ballistic weapons and fusion weapons and plasma weapons and you name it. Now, the reason that there's going to be a diversity of this kind of weapon is that different weapons are good at defeating different kinds of armor. So there's this constant battle between the ability of the armor to protect and the ability of the weapon to penetrate. So if you're going to be stacking on different types of weapon, there's no reason not to stack on different types of armor. But most games do not. They're happy to stack up different types of weapon, but they neglect the idea that armor itself can be better or worse against those different varieties of weapon. Next one, stacking saves. That's something else which is very common in tabletop games. Again, Games Workshop are the principal culprit that people will have heard of, but there's no shortage of other examples. A stacking save is basically, we talked about the three dice. Hit, wound, save is when you add more dice after that one. So we've got an armor save, and now we've got an invulnerable save, and now we've got a feel no pain save. You know, those are the classic Games Workshop options. And to some extent, I understand mathematically why they've gone there, because the D6 is a very limiting statistical tool. It's one of the challenges with it. I mean, it's a good dice, but it's not a great dice. For example, you cannot do a 25% chance on a D6 unless you roll it again. So if you've got a 4 plus on a D6, that's a 1 in 2 chance. If you want a 1 in 4 chance, you've got to roll a 4 plus and then roll it again for a 4 plus. Then you've got a 1 in 4 chance. So, just very briefly, D12s are my personal favourite. As you know, of course, we played any Horizon Wars games. I love a D12. D12 does a 1 in 4 chance. No trouble at all. 10 plus, it's 1 in 4 chance. Easy peasy. Just saying. The problem with then relying on a dice like a D6 that isn't that flexible is that you're always tempted to add more dice. I mean, well, you know, if we're going to go for a 1 in 2, a 1 in 4, why not a 1 in 8? Why not a 1 in 16? You know, you're just rolling more and more and more dice. The more dice you're rolling, the further you're getting away from the combat on the tabletop, in my opinion. Okay, let's take a slight side angle here and talk about vehicle armor. Vehicle armor is not the same as people armor. First question, the rhetorical question for you guys listening. Is vehicle armor there to protect the vehicle, or is it there to protect the crew? Well, I'll answer that question for you really simply. It's there to protect the vehicle. The crew being protected is a happy byproduct. As a result, you'll be unsurprised to hear that the vast majority of anti-armor weapons in modern warfare are not designed to harm the vehicle so much as they are designed to harm the crew. So take the two most common examples. First being the heat round, high explosive anti-tank. And there are umpteen designs of heat round used in various different types and scales all over the world, from ones that are fired by tanks themselves through to a rocket-propelled grenade launcher. Okay, so heat round, high explosive anti-tank. The explosive bit, the high explosive bit on a heat round, occurs before the round has hit the tank. And people who don't know tanks find this surprising. Now, I should take a pause briefly to say that I am not an ex-tanky or indeed a particularly armor-enthusiastic wargamer. I know that there are tankies who will watch and or listen to this, so any technical errors I make, I apologise, but this is stuff that I remember from my own military training, and I have done a little bit of revision before recording to make sure that I wasn't getting anything wrong. The heat round works by exploding and compressing a metal core, usually a soft metal core of copper or something along those lines. It is that metal core that is compressed and forced forward through a shaped head into the armoured target. It is that compressed, liquefied metal that penetrates the armour target. And if it penetrates through the armour, it then explodes outwards on the far side of the armour, effectively coating the inside of the vehicle with liquefied metal, which, as you can imagine, has a somewhat terminal effect on the people inside it. Okay, that's a heat rat. The other popular anti-tank weapon in modern armed forces is the HESH or HEP round. HESH is high explosive squash head, HEP is high explosive plastic. They're the same thing. In this case, this is more like, have you ever seen that toy slime that you can throw at glass? It slaps on the glass and then kind of rolls its way down. Imagine that a HESH round is a bit like that. The weapon itself hurls a rocket or missile at the target that then slaps the squash head or plastic onto the side of the target, which then immediately explodes. That squash head plastic invariably is not powerful enough in its own right to penetrate the armour. Rather, what it does is blister off on the inside through the shockwave that goes through the armour, fragments of the internal metal plating that then spin around the inside of the vehicle. It basically turns the inside of the armoured vehicle into a large blender. Forgive me if that's a little bit explicit, but this is how modern anti-vehicles work. It's how they have worked since the Second World War. There's really not been much development or evolution. The weapons have become more sophisticated, they've become better, they've become more reliable, they've been able to penetrate deeper, but the core mechanics of how these weapons work is essentially unchanged for 50 plus years. But there is a distinction in the damage to a vehicle, because military tend to talk about vehicles either suffering an M kill or suffering a K kill. A K kill is this vehicle is dead, it will no longer function. An M kill is this vehicle is still functioning, but it will no longer move without repair. And there are games that do a reasonable job. In fact, quite a lot of games do a reasonable job of distinguishing between an M kill and a K kill. You get a lot of games where a vehicle can be immobilized in place. And that's a good thing. That is definitely a reasonable reflection on reality. Where we perhaps see less impact is not necessarily on the nature of the kills, but on the nature of the armour. Because a big difference between people armour and vehicle armour is that vehicle armour gets used up. Now, it should be said, people armour also gets used up. You know, once you've been hit, say, in a steel or ceramic chest plate, you don't want to wear that to your next engagement. If you've been hit in your helmet and you've survived, you want a new helmet. You know, it does get used up. But because a human target that has been struck penetratively on its armour, but its life has been saved, is still injured, they generally are no longer participating in the battle. But a vehicle will continue to participate even though it's been hit. And vehicle armour is intentionally used up. A lot of vehicle armour is ablative, or it is reactive, or explosive, or it's composite armour of some sort, that once that armour has been hit, it is either no longer effective at all, like explosive armour, which explodes. Basically, the idea is it explodes outward to absorb the explosive inward coming strike. and the idea is they cancel each other out. But once it's exploded, it's gone. Or you have ablative arm, like ceramic plating. Once it's hit, it absorbs and spreads the impact, but it shatters and explodes. It's gone. It won't work again. Many types of composite armor work the same way. Once they've taken an impact, they are fundamentally flawed, literally flawed. They have a flaw in them that means if they are impacted again, you know, they will no longer protect the vehicle. And I don't see that often being well represented in games. A vehicle in many tabletop games, they've got an armor value. It may vary depending on the side of the vehicle you're shooting at, but that value is unchanged whether it's the start of the battle, the end of the battle, whether the vehicle's taken one hit or 100 hits. Okay, it's still its armor value. And when you're talking about games with that degree of granularity, there is definitely room to allow for the idea that armor values or armor qualities can ablate across the course of a game. I talked about that difference between people armor and vehicle armor. People armor is not used up, vehicle armor is. There's a bigger difference between people armor and vehicle armor. Just to emphasize, I've mentioned this a couple of times, if people armor works, the person is usually still hors de combat. They are usually no longer able to continue fighting, at least for a period. If vehicle armor works, the vehicle continues to work, pretty much unchanged. That is reasonable and realistic, and most games do that. So, you know, where I'm complaining about how people whose armor saves them just continue as if nothing has happened, that is true of people targets. It is not true of vehicle targets. Completely legit. Okay, last topic I wanted to cover on the subject of armor is armor and avoidance. And, you know, I got to hold my hand up here because Horizon Wars, the original game, is one game like many others that wrap up the concept of avoidance and the concept of armor into one mechanic. I recently wrote a review for Tabletop Games UK of In Her Majesty's Name, second edition, and that's a good example of a skirmish game that does the same thing. It's a reasonable idea if you work on the assumption that armor continues to be effective and that any given wound prevented by an armor does not impede the individual from continuing to fight. And this is not a go at In Her Majesty's Name, because when you're dealing with historical combats, possibly the period of In Her Majesty's Name, that sort of pre-First World War, late 19th century period, it doesn't quite fit in. But certainly before that, when you're talking about conflicts, pre-medieval, medieval, late medieval, early modern conflicts, where you still have low-velocity munitions, arrows, crossbows, early firearms, and you have a lot of close combat weapons, axes, maces, swords, and such like. Under those circumstances, it is more reasonable to work on the idea that a blow that is deflected or prevented by armor will not prevent the individual from continuing to fight. But go along to any reenactment and watch people get hit in the head with swords and axes and stuff like that. Just because the armor has deflected the blow doesn't mean they are unaffected by the impact. Compare and contrast then to when somebody has completely avoided that blow. You know, they've ducked under it or it's missed them. Under those circumstances, it doesn't even matter whether they're wearing armor or not. They are utterly unaffected by the attack. You could say there might be a psychological impact from having narrowly avoided being hit. You might talk about people being under fire and pinned down. That's completely reasonable. And you can bring in psychological mechanics, which is something I will definitely talk about in the future. But it really is... it's one of those things that works better as you scale up the abstraction. The more abstract a game is, the more easy it is to roll in concepts of armor and avoidance. And I did it in Horizon Wars because I felt it was abstract enough to get away with it. As you get down to skirmish level games, and especially modern, ultra-modern, near-future sci-fi skirmish games, so the question of avoidance and armor, it becomes less appropriate to wrap those things up into a single mechanic. Right, that's really everything that I wanted to cover on armor. So let's bring up some conclusions on this and take away some learning points that I would like people to think about when they're writing their own games or adapting games, or when they're thinking about how to make their tabletop war games experience more fulfilling, more immersive. Okay, so number one, acknowledge that there are degrees of impact. And I would say that the degrees of impact, broadly speaking, for any level of game, are psychological impact, a physical impairment, a physical debilitation, and death. And you could wrap up physical debilitation and death depending on whether you want to include evacuation mechanics and to what extent you want morale to be affected by casualties in your game. Okay? But psychological debilitation, sorry, psychological impairment, debilitation, and death. Okay, are the four broad areas, the degrees of impact that a shot could have that armor may mitigate against to different degrees. But an armor save should not prevent all of these. There should always be, at the very least, some level of psychological impairment arising from a physical hit saved by armor. Two, don't stack escape clauses. Okay, so if an armor save fails, resist adding additional types of armor save that stack one after the other. Come up with different kinds of armor save, by all means. Different types of armor is appropriate, it is right and proper. But just stacking armor save after armor save, it is lazy design. Number three, let armor ablate, especially on vehicles. So let armor get worse over the course of a game. Something that I would throw in there, especially if you're dealing with battle level games that involve vehicles and similar. On individual people, it's less important. And number four, where you can, separate the effects of armor and avoidance. Obviously, as I said, the more abstract a game becomes, the more you can get away with it. But generally speaking, resist the temptation to roll them up into one thing and go, oh, well, they're both not getting wounded by something. They are definitely not that. Armor and avoidance are very different mechanics. Right, that's everything that I've got to say this week. Thank you very much for listening and or watching, if this video has worked. Horizon Wars Zero Dark 28mm skirmish game is available from Wargame Vault. And as of date of recording, 28th of May, so is Horizon Wars Infinite Dark, which is a spaceship combat game built on the same principles. And you can go and have a look at those and see if I am true to my own advice. The answer is sometimes. Other than that, thank you very much. I will be back on the podcast next week.
The Precinct Omega Game Design Podcast is supported by our patrons on Patreon. Go to patreon.com/Precinct Omega to help us continue developing new games and creating hobby content for war games enthusiasts all over the world.